Welcome to the European Hockey Federation podcast, in conversation with the biggest names in hockey, generating insights and engagements around coaching, officiating and playing. Powered by Coach Logic and supported by the FIH Academy. Presented by Jack Rolfe, the founder of the Coaching Lab. The second episode provided the unique chance to listen to former China and German head coach Jamila Mulders on what it takes to work on the international scene and his experiences of preparing for international competitions at the highest level. Over to Jack.
Good afternoon, good evening, depending where you're from. It's great to have you on board for the second Euro Hockey webinar. I'm Jack Rolfe, founder of the Coaching Lab and presenter for the series that we've got coming up over the next few weeks. Like many of you would have found, you could access the webinars afterwards on Coach Logic, so you'll be able to catch up on Bobby's one from last week on the Clubhouse, and the same again with Yami this week. Slightly different this week, it'll be a bit more of a presentation format followed by a Q&A at the end. So we'd invite you to keep your questions coming through the chat box. But as we go, we'll bring them on towards the end. Really exciting to welcome Yami Mulders, former head coach of the German women and the Chinese women as well. And someone that's been there, done it, and got the medals to show for it as well. Someone that's got great knowledge and great experience and can articulate incredibly well his journey and his philosophy and his experience. So Yami, thank you very much for jumping on board, and I'm sure there'll be a lot of exciting people to have you here with us today. So Yami, you're going to share your screen and we'll go from there. But as we say, coaches, just keep the questions coming through and we'll pick them up at the end. Enjoy.
Perfect. Thanks, Jack, for the introduction. So hi, guys. I will just make sure that I share my screen. So there we go. So topic of today is how to manage an international tournament. And normally we should have talked with the groups of TCP coaches about this at the EHL tournament. And now I'm super happy that EHF made it possible that we can discuss it in a quite bigger group right now. And we talked about this with a smaller group of coaches last year at the Euros. So for me, it's about to present you what is really important and how we can prioritize. And for me, key is from a coach's perspective, how to empower others. So it's no matter what, if you're a head coach of a national team, club team, youth team, whatever, it's always about thinking about, okay, what do we need to consider? And these are just a few topics I would love to talk through. Staff resources, which is key. How can we really manage a tournament and how can we prepare it? Selection process is always a nice discussion point when you're together with coaches. Some general questions first. And less is sometimes more, or less is more, seems to be one of the key topics of this webinar. At the end, some Q&A, and I'm really looking forward to your remarks and questions. Let's start. So the starting point, it's I love this picture because it's really something where you're really in the tournament already. So, and before you're at this point, where really big changes are not that possible. It's you have to think before you start acting. So what's your main focus on? And you have certain points during your pathway of a coach and during the moment when you're leading a group. So it's a starting point when you take over or when you have to evaluate after a major event before the next one. Or it's just before every tournament you're going through, you really want to make sure again, what is the main focus? And my personal focus and the ones we've worked with is always on the athletes. So it's athlete spotted. So it's never on us. It's never on the bigger system, the organization. It's always about the athletes. So, and you have to make sure always that you remind yourself on whatever you do, whatever you are thinking about, whatever you're acting about is about the athletes. Then it's about, you have to think about what you want to learn from. I'm really a fan about learning from the future, because I need to know where we want to end up. And that gives us questions to our day. So when we want to appear, we want to perform at a certain moment in the future. So what do we need to do now to end up there? And learning from the past is always the ones the management and business are doing. It's about, okay, this one went bad, so we go to the opposite. I would suggest learning from the future is really something that helps us. Then it's about, is it a centralized or decentralized program? How often do you have your athletes? You can think about time, budget, and the whole environment. But more important is the cultural aspects. So what kind of culture is there already? What kind of culture do you want to implement? Or do the players need to really perform and to peak at the main event? So this one is just a simple slide about, okay, if the future needs origin, then in which system and with what kind of people do you have to deal with? So you have to really think about, okay, who is around you and who is around your players and who is around your assistant coaches and staff members, because all of them are influencing the individuals. And so you can really make sure what's your starting point. And you have to make sure, is it really possible to change major facts of a culture? Because it takes a while. It takes a long time to really change culture. And if you want to change the way of training and the way of behaving and organization and the whole setup, and then you want to implement it onto a really top level platform of performance, that takes a while. And you have to make sure, at what time do you want to do what certain step? The elements we should know, and I really love this picture, is that we have to consider, it doesn't work that quick, so we make it easier. Make it that quick without any of these. So when you take over, you need to know the results. So really where you come from and what the targets are. Criticism and honesty is something people and coaches and players really love to talk about, but only if it's not about themselves. So what is the culture of how to criticize someone and how to be really honest within the group? What's the culture of the group? And you have to figure out who has really leadership abilities in your group for this certain tournament. So who can really manage things without being said by you or without being said by the staff? Who has really the natural DNA of leading? And that doesn't need to be always the person who always done it. There can be someone else, and it's not about age. It's not about how many caps they have played. It's about really the ability, and you need to figure out who is really in this group able to perform and to lead under pressure. And then my really preferred topic is the intelligence of the group. So my culture would always be more an athlete-supported culture. So that means I want to know players' opinion, and I want to facilitate as good as possible that they can really make decisions. Well, that means you have to cope with it, that they do mistakes. That's part of the game. So hockey is a game of mistakes. So, but as more you give it to the players, it's a player game, as more they can benefit from it, as more they can learn from it. And the perfect thing is that if you really start listening to the group of players and you get more and more diversity and you get more and more, I would say, a quality level of intelligence, because it's not only those two or three guys are talking and thinking about things, it's the whole group of players. And that makes it far more interesting, but also challenging on the same time. Just a quick example of how a focus can be during a prep tournament, that you think about, okay, if we go to a prep tournament, what is our main target? And it's a great opportunity to develop content and principles, and to see how they really interact on the pitch together. You can really use it to develop the group itself. So how do we do meetings? What do we do with free time? How often do we have free time? And why do we do this? That's also an important part. Because sometimes if coaches are result driven, they start changing the schedule, and then you lose time and focus. And in my opinion, if you want to develop a group, then they need to have a really consistent way of doing things. And that means free time is their quality time. So don't take it away from them. But other way, if you give it to them in that case, then if you ask for training and you want to enable training stimuli, then you really need to be focused and on board. And we need to make sure on the job that we check the processes. So how is the process from the physios, from the manager, from the analyst, all of them, because there we can try to really adjust step by step to end up on top performance level. And if we do this, so if meetings, trainings, games, all this stuff, the general behavior really gets constantly structured, then you start to build a stable culture. And this is what we all want. We want to make sure that we empower every single member of the group to really perform at its best. And that can only happen if they really feel comfortable, trusted, and that it's really, that we really make sure that it's worth to work with them. Let's go to the selection process. This is only suggestions by me, so how I look at it, and my staff members and I have done for really years. And it's always asking you these questions before selection, and it's super complex. And I will never ask to a single player to understand this, but it's important that all staff members who are really involved in this are on the same page. So it's the question about when do you want to select a group? And it's always funny to see that sometimes coaches start shifting the date of selection further and further because of not being sure. And I'm not convinced that one single game makes a difference. For sure, it's about gut feeling, but only dropping it by, I'm not sure. We expect a lot from the players, so to organize their studies, families, and everything. So then we have to stick to the schedule as well. So is it about development? Then I select them early to give them far more trust, and I know certain players will go through the roof after being selected. Or is it just about super late, but then it's just about the performance, and then I took those ones. So then what potential we recognize? So is there any risk? So is there someone injured? Is there anything happening behind the curtain? What we only guess would not know. So we have to know, are there any risks included? So what's really required right now? Is there something? So, and then it's about my favorite question is, who is really the player who makes others better? That's normally not the player who gets spotted by others first. These are definitely the top goalkeepers, the top strikers, the flickers, the PCA machines. But who's really the glue within the group who makes others better? Who's really the one who's working for the others without asking for any reputation? And there you have to look for. And then you have to see, okay, who can make the difference? And then if you work in a, I would say, more European-based system, you have to see, does it affect my nomination? Does it affect players or clubs? So is there something I need to know from the clubs and from the club coaches? In my opinion, those are the ones who are really key if you want to really create a long-term sportsmanship career from players. So you have to listen carefully to those ones because they are linked to them, the S&C coaches at home, and the club coaches at home who work with them on a weekly basis. And you have to know if I select a player or if I don't select him, that makes a difference. And if it comes to the Olympic rings, everyone knows that careers get stopped or get boosted without being asked for. So it's that's always important to recognize. Some questions you can go through afterwards as well when it's uploaded on Coach Logic. If you do a selection for Four Nations as for an under 21, which is also important then for the whole pathway or just for test games, it's always again, what's the primary target? And how long and how often can we give experience to players to play certain teams? So for example, if you haven't played Australia for long or New Zealand for long and they are around and you know they can be crucial and they can be important for us within the next major event, okay, do I want to give this experience to some players? And we need to really think about always how can we balance those kind of players with injuries and who needs rest, and how can we balance the team on each level, or how can we use this time to really put them in place to play in a totally new, I would say, position. Yeah, so whoever played fullback, left back, his whole career gets an opportunity to play midfield or even striker. So that they really can get used to an understanding, and that we can see, okay, how can we really use every player at its best? I love this picture, and I honestly asked before using this that it's allowed to use it. It's a lovely gym in Rio. And yeah, I love it because it shows it's not always important to push the heavy weights. Trust in the process is far more important, and finding the balance and what do the players really need. And if you talk about a Four Nations development, it's really to balance the known stress in advance. So that means for every event you're going through, for every camp you're going through, why not sending the schedule 2 weeks beforehand to the players? Give it to the players. You know, it will not change. They know when they arrive, the first 2 days, what's going on. So you limit the really stress in advance, and you really invite them to be part of it. And they know, okay, the first days are like these. We won't change anything. We are really focused on content, and it's not result driven. It's really focused on us. And if you're in an environment of a formation or a camp, try new things, be open for it. And if you're on a major event, like we've done it for years, it's if you understand what the players need and not what the coaches need, then, for example, you can say, we don't do any hockey session as soon as the tournament starts. So in Rio at the Olympics, we haven't done any hockey session at that moment the tournament started. So that means it's only be fresh on game day. That means the SNC coach, the physio, and the manager are the key persons. And the hockey coach has to find his own position within the system. Don't give an overload to the players. Deal with yourself. Learn to calm down. And don't give them an overload, because they need a maximum freshness. And that's really important. And then training is what really makes a difference. So if you go to training, then do it with really high quality, and don't do it even because it needs to be done. This video I will upload later on, or Jack will upload it, but it's too bumpy to run it here. It's about our SNC coach, Tilman Bokhorst. He's really one of the ones I really appreciate, one of the best. He went with us the whole way in Germany and in China. And if I say the final say is always up to him, then I really mean it. That means he is the one who really has to say, this player needs rest. The physio, the doctor have done this and that. You can play or you cannot play him. And that's super important, because if you really get experts on board, you don't need to get them on board if you don't give them a final say. And it's super important that they have to attend the process. So the players are the ones who really need to collaborate with him. That's not, they don't need to collaborate with me. It needs to be about him, because they have to experience and learn that all the things that he's doing, that's really helpful. And don't even consider to introduce this before a major event shortly or during. But if you know he can make the difference, and he has done the difference and he's still doing it, then really introduce him as early as possible and empower them to really involve and show their whole strengths and really knowledge. And that's important. The workflow requires trust. And it's all about really development. At every certain stage, if it's the Olympics or if it's the World Cup or whatever is the major event, could be also an under 21, under 18 tournament, it's always just about development. And there are just, in my opinion, there are just a few games. I explore just a few games where it's about the result. And all the other games I've ever been involved to was about philosophy and development. And that is really key. And this whole map shows you what he has done together with the staff without my help, because he's an expert. He has his jobs during games and training, afterwards in the morning. And that's what I guess most of the guys who are running the S&C program are doing this. And this is why they are so key for us. And the major thing is collect really and produce data long-term, to really have a baseline to help the players and to understand what's really needed. Because as the older they get, the more they get used to a certain routine, which is good, but it's only good if they really still keep on moving and on developing, and if they don't stand still in their development. And those guys like Tillman are the ones who are really challenging the athletes, but in a way where it's vice versa, they trust each other. And that's unique in my opinion. And when you look at this, if you want to manage really a top tournament, you have to figure out, okay, what's really possible. And we've started with small things. So in 2014, after the World Cup, we started implementing yoga. You have the doctors, the physios. So in the beginning, in 2012, after the Olympics, we said every player needs to see the physio every day. Either it's treatment or it's wellness, but they have to be there to get a better understanding of everything. And then when I remember, I would call it the war room of the physios and doctors, and what kind of equipment they brought with them on their own bill sometimes. It was amazing. But the players run the process. So the black rolls, stretching, the way they really explored what's really needed from nutritionists was amazing. And when I look at this and you see every player invest 2 hours individually afterwards, including ice baths, yoga, whatever, that's amazing how athletes really develop throughout the last 10 years because it's so different to this. And that's key at the end, every time. It's always about freshness on game day. Nothing else matters, in my opinion. I wouldn't call it funny, but if you really want to go through a tournament, and it, depending on what kind of tournament it is, you always have to talk about the challenges away from tactics and technology. And I'm still sorry that I haven't talked about a single minute about tactics, but if you want to manage a tournament, there are a few more things before we talk about tactics. And just the first row, it's just, still it's the Olympics, but it could be also any other. So opening ceremony can pull out so much energy of a group if you don't talk about this beforehand. So we manage it easy. It's like, it's depending on the schedule. So if we don't play on the next day, you can go. If we have to play on the next day, we can't go. So it was super clear. And as soon the FIH and IOC published the schedule for the women's tournament, it was obvious that we don't play. So the girls were allowed to go. And it was them and two staff members who joined the ceremony. And it was for sure an emotional boost. But being in the village and not being allowed to go, it's a bit frustrating. And then you can meet everyone in the village, and the village itself, and all the super famous guys, and the dining hall. That's really a challenge, because being in the dining hall, which is 24/7 open, there are some studies who proved right that some athletes and also coaches put on some weight during the Olympics, because everything's accessible all the time. And then you talk about entertainment. I would say every manager knows it, that getting tickets for any other sport or for the family itself for the tournaments is a horror to organize it, yeah, because everyone is asking for, and everyone is pissed if you don't manage it quite well. And if you talk about this can all really put the focus away from the origin thing. You are there because you are there to perform. You're not there to make pictures, and you're not there for the opening ceremony, and you're not there for the entertainment, but it's part of it, and it's lovely, and it's key. And the press and the social media, who knows how the IOC is dealing with it, everyone is used to take a picture with this iPhone, and it's going through and doing some video. You can be really in trouble doing this, or wearing the wrong shirt, or wearing the wrong shoes, or whatever. So this needs to be considered beforehand. And I just want to mention two things at the end. It's about injuries, and it's about test games, because it belongs together in our story. Because we played a test game against India, and I think it was the last game before we should start into the tournament. And we went to the stadium, played the game, all was fine, game was done. And then at the end of the game, when the girls, they have done their jog and their stretching, a wind came into the stadium and blew away the bench, straight on the foot of Charlotte Stadmorst. So it was massive. So it was an injury where you say, okay, can she play, can she not play? And if you don't have any protocols for this, and at that moment we haven't had any protocols for such an idea, because I haven't thought about it. So an injury at the end of the last test game before the tournament, and you have two reserve players and you will need them in this exhausting tournament. Will you pull them in now or will you wait? So we decided to wait. So she missed out the first game, I think so. I'm not really sure anymore, it's long ago. But the injury was massive in the beginning, and then everyone was happy that it wasn't a fracture. But considering all of this, I learned, okay, I cannot eliminate everything, most of it, but not everything. And especially this injury proved me right, that you always have to be, I would say, ready to jump into an emergency mode, to really make a decision and to keep the program consistent. Check-in for meetings. Let's go quick through. Just a recommendation from my side. You can start without it, but I prefer, and I explored it, that's far nicer with the group to get connected. If you're not in a centralized program, if you're in a decentralized program, in a club, whatever, that they really know how the others are right now and what kind of status. So how I'm doing, what happened since we met last time, and that you really start connecting. And we have done it with teams for long, and I always figure out that it helps to understand my teammate far better. And if they get involved, and we talked about the intelligence of the team, and if they ask questions, if they define a way, if they make a final step and they feel convinced about a certain thing, that's far more powerful than being told by a coach. And the same on meetings. We never shared everything with them. You don't need to do it. But we need to make sure that we don't overload them. Yeah, we need short meetings, because the question is, what kind of tournament are you playing? How long haven't you met before? So do you need this tournament for development? Then you need a bit more meetings, smaller group meetings, or bigger team meetings for tuning. But you need to make sure that the way of preparing the game day should be also happening in a consistent way. So meeting before the game, on game day, and the day after. So that, how do you give them access to videos, to stats? When do you start talking to them? When do you really have to go through this game, or can you leave it out? Just take the principles and focus on the next game. So what important is, they need to really feel empowered and not to have an overload, and they need to play with an inner freedom. That's, in my opinion, super, super important. And one key thing is this late night team talk. If it's on game day, don't talk about hockey in general, but it's about giving them an impression before they go to bed, how you've explored it, or if some of them really want to talk about it, how they've explored the day. It can be about the game, but it shouldn't be. It can be something else. But that you don't meet at the next day, that you have a certain point on the day where you say, okay, now the day is done. Good night. We go on the next day. So this is the way we set up camps, tournaments, events, game days, so that they start really talking to each other as much as possible. I think everyone knows it. Everyone wants to have a say, a psychologist, process coach, goalkeeper coach, all experts you're hiring. They really cross lines, and they need to be connected. And it's not always this one is right and this one is wrong. It's always about the gray area in between. We have to learn to read. But everyone who is on board needs to have a certain value. And that's, for me, key. And they have to understand how it really works. And when you look at this, it just should show you that everyone is nearly linked to everyone. So you can't say, as a doctor, I do my stuff and I'm not related to the assistants or the other guys, the goalkeeper coach, the analyst, or the SNC coach. It all belongs to each other. So everyone needs to know that, okay, if we work, we need to make it transparent, and everyone needs to have a role and responsibility beforehand. And the others needs to know it as well. So there's no secret that these are the three main persons around me when it's talk about the manager. So Julia is one of the best in the world of hockey, and she is really the absolute boss. She has the say. So if she says we do it this way, I would not complain about it. Yeah, because she has to think ahead, future events, what's possible, what are the learnings, what do we need to do? And together with the high performance director, those two really facilitate everything around the financial department, everything related to the bigger system. And you have to make sure that they really feel welcome and supported, and you really have to listen to their view on things. And on the long track, it's manager and SNC coach who really monitor things for the athletes, for the system, and their advice was key to me. And when I look at the others, it's about physios and doctors and SNC coach, for sure, who work closely together, goalkeeper coach and analyst, who had a really, those two guys had really tough weeks in Rio, because they stayed outside the village, so they always traveled back and forth, and they did a marvelous job every single day without complaining a single second. And that was really challenging for them and our developer and analyst at home. So he was the one who worked at night and went through all the scripting and sent it back, sent all the stats back to us. And so you can see the bigger picture that if everyone has this role and responsibility, they can work within a freedom. And those two guys, my assistants, Andre and Andreas, they really challenged me. We were never, the whole group was never a homogen staff. It was always heterogeneous. It was always challenging, but never personal. It was always about content, always about the group, the sport on the athletes. And it was great to have those two guys where us three shared everything related to the game. And it was not him was responsible for defense or offense. It was us responsible for the group, sharing every day, have a group meeting every day with the whole staff every second day. So make sure that everything is considered and that everyone can really work on his strengths, but with always recognizing that there are bigger things needed. And so sometimes you have to say, okay, we can't do a meeting right now with the group because they have to do certain things, or we can't do anything with the goalkeepers right now because he wants to train, or we can't do anything with the players right now because those three guys want to have them for a rest. So it's us three considering what's needed on the pitch and around the pitch, but always sharing every day what's your personal view on the things. And this kind of networking and considering others and opinions, that's really exhausting on one side, but it's also very beneficial and vitalizing on the other side. And the main thing is always, when you do this, you always have to ask yourself, and I question myself every morning on game day, are they really ready to fly? And now we end up with the summarizing of this. And I just would say it's, never ask for it. Give it to others. That's the most important thing. And if I always talk about trust the process, it's not about just telling them, stick to the process. You always have to be aware of, guys, if it's needed, we do changes. That's possible. You need to keep this open mindset, because otherwise it's not about protecting the process. It's you're about convinced about this philosophy, but you're not dull. You're not stupid. So stay open-minded and always notice any dynamics. That's worth said. Speak the same language, and it doesn't matter if any assistant talked to any players. I would never ask for what have they talked about it, because I trust them, because it's the same philosophy and we're united in our targets and pathway. Take your time, and I don't say it because it's because of COVID-19. It's a crazy time. That's what I'm convinced about always. Really make sure that you give quality time to staff and team, and also to yourself. And for me, it was really crucial to learn this. And you have to perform on game day as well. It's not only about the players, it's also about the coaches. You have to be on top of your performance level at the end of the tournament as well as the group. This is something, if you talk about the last two points, mental health counts. Every day more and more in the bigger world that everyone understands this, but you have to have a high productivity and high moral and low turnovers. Get rid of all the irritations and politics, and really spot on respect, spot on courage and commitment, and give everyone really the opportunity to be open and to be unique. You don't want to have them all in the same way. So in this soldier moral, you really want to have diversity on every group you're working with, because that gives a massive increase of creativity. And lots of time of talking, guys. It's 5 minutes longer than I promised to Jack. I rushed through a bit because I want to make sure that you all get the opportunity to ask some questions. And again, sorry for not talking about tactics, but it's, for me, it's a bigger picture. It's an holistic approach about to manage a group of of athletes and staff members if you really want to peak at certain moments. And then you have to consider really bigger topics than budget and tactics, because budget, leave it out to the manager and responsible persons, and tactics, they will always work far better if everybody knows his role and responsibility.
Yami, top stuff. I think you deserve a drink. So good job there. Thank you for being so open and honest. We've got some questions to fire through. Some will be quite hockey specific and some a little bit more general. And this first one from Nathan Hicks, you've obviously done a psychology degree. And what influences have that? I think we can see a lot of the influence, but before and after, what do you see the differences of undergoing that degree?
So I don't have the degree yet. I'm working on it. Let me take it the other way around. It's for me, it became logic to start studying it because I'm into it for now more than 20 years, surrounded by experts. So I get more and more convinced about that if people are not linked to each other, if they're not connected, if they don't get empowered, if they don't really enjoy what they're doing, if they're not happy at work, let me say like this, they can't perform and they don't have a long time sportsmanship career. And that's what my personal opinion is, my job is, I have to facilitate and make sure that they really stay as long as possible on the circuit without getting depressed, injured and whatever. So that's why I'm talking about also about mental health.
And I think some would argue that every coach is a psychologist in their own way because they're dealing with people and dealing with their minds as well.
I would say the hidden psychologists are more the managers, the physios, the doctors, the S&C coaches, because they are far closer connected to the players.
Get a lot of information. I got a question here, very hockey specific, from Danny Crofer. When analysing penalty corners, what are you looking for? What are a few takeaways there?
Mm-hmm. So when I look at this one here, this one is Lucas. So Lucas was our analyst. And for example, when we talk about PCA, PCD, quarterfinals, semifinals at the Olympics was all done by him, because I never watched any PC during the tournament when it comes to knockout stage, because I trusted him. And we looked at to make sure that we know the possible variations and that we limit the possibilities, so that we give goalkeepers and first runners, so the flyers, a clear view on what's going on. That means we tracked for years every corner, and then it's about which player with which stopper and which flicker has the biggest success rate. Where do they stop? First castle, second castle, who is on the pitch? So our players, our flyers and goalkeepers, they manage at the end anything on their own because they knew who is on the pitch and what could happen. And that was the reason why we had such a good PCD, for example. So it's about knowing your opponents. That's what we're looking at. So really knowing at numbers and abilities.
Great question, Danny. Moving on to Simon Lowdery. Where does zonal defense in the circle sit in the current game? And what would be some of the basic concepts around that?
If we have used it, or what is it at our
days? Where does it sit in the current game? Yeah.
In my opinion, a lot of teams switch to man-to-man, especially in the own D defense. And I don't think it's about either this or that. So it depends on where the ball is. So where's the ball and where do we want to allow them to go through? And we're not. And do we want to invite them to go through somewhere? Then we can, for example, we can switch from man to zonal and we gain ball possession. But I wouldn't say, if I got the question right, that it's just about this, that it's the perfect way of doing this. I would say defending their own D is man-to-man marking is still crucial.
Mm-hmm. We've got a lot of questions around the time that you spent in China, and obviously going from the German women to the Chinese women. I wonder if you could share some of those experiences about what have you taken away? What did you take with you in terms of the experience? There's a lot of questions coming up around that.
Okay. It was, the time in China was amazing. It's such a unique culture, and it's so different to what we explore in our, I would say, daily routine, daily life. So the difference of being in Beijing with more than 23 million people. So being there, really enjoying it, or living in a small village in the south of China in Sichuan province in Hunger, which is also unique. So it's they really took care of us. They really treated us well. And it gave me a lot of ideas, but also a lot of tough questions to go through, how to work within the system, because it's centralized. Totally about athletes' approach, responsibilities of coaches, high authorities, hierarchy, all this stuff. But it was really worth to go there, and I really enjoyed it.
And Yami, did you go on your own, or did you go with an assistant coach from Germany? Because I can imagine a foreigner going into that environment is quite different.
No, I went there with the S&C coach, with my S&C coach, with the manager, with an assistant, and later on with another one as well. And then we had a physiotherapist from New Zealand, which was not unusual for Chinese sport at that stage, because there are foreigners hired in every sport, and nearly in every sport. That's an idea from the higher authorities, from the government. So to implement quality from outside the country to improve and increase the quality then inside the country. But that doesn't fit always well, because sometimes there's still a struggle with, okay, we should do it that way if we want to improve them, but then you can't do it because of certain reasons. And then you have to learn to adjust and to adapt. But I was there, God bless, with great people around me.
Awesome, good stuff. Got one from Don in London here. When watching your team, where do you like to stand and why? And the other second part to that is, when you're watching your team, what are you looking at, and what are you looking at in your position?
When I'm watching the team, I never watch where the ball is. So I'm always focused on the help side. So how can we connect ball side to help side? That they always understand that they always have a job on the pitch. So if the ball is up front, I'm always observing and watching the defenders. So can they close the gap? Can they shift up? Can they really stay connected and think ahead, think in the future? So what's next? That's one thing. I tried a few things, but I'm not the guy who's really on the stance. So then I'm not involved, and I need to stay in touch with the players. But I'm sure some players always wished that I would stay on the stance, which is far, far nicer for them. But I learned to be more balanced on the bench from what I've done 15 years ago to what I would do now. Yeah, I think it's a big difference. But watching them on the bench, stay connected, talking through the game, going through the game together with them, and listening to them, that's really what I really like.
Got a great question here from Geordie around the shootouts in the game, but more about training and how do you train them, and in what moments are you training them, and how do they integrate it into your program?
Yeah, consistently, not only before events. So we've managed to do it whenever it's possible, during camps, during trainings. You have to be careful, because it's sometimes it's big fun for the players, and it's really exhausting for the goalkeepers. Yeah. So I would divide it, and you have to distinguish between developing a player to really execute and the goalkeeper. And Jimmy Lewis, he has done a marvelous job with all the goalkeepers for years, because he has the ability really to extract the important moments of movements of goalkeepers. So how can we manipulate to do things that players really start thinking about, okay, I do this or that. And that means you have to do it on the video, you have to do it with stats, and you have to do it on the pitch. And then you have to ask, or we have done it like asking players to do certain things, so try this or try that, and then have a look. This is a really successful movement, try this. Or against this goalkeeper, it makes sense to do this. Or if you want to do this now, try it, but keep in mind, if he starts doing the opposite, you need plan B. So this is a way you can really make them familiar with it, but it also takes time. So I would not start doing it just right before an event. It just needs to be part of the daily routine of training, like PCA and PCD or free hits.
Awesome. Got a question here from Will Murray about talent ID and the framework. So what does that framework look like? And is that similar to your selection process?
Talent ID, I would divide into on the player and the ball, player and the game. So player and his mate, and player and on and off the pitch. So that's the way I look at them. So, and how do they handle the ball? How do they handle the game? How do they understand the game? And it's, again, sometimes you have to look away from the ball to see how players act and behave and really react on the game to understand if they have a certain impact or not, and if you would call them talent or not. It's not only about how they touch the ball, there's far more, and how can they learn new things in short amount of time, instead of you have to treat them always, you have to teach them always to go through. So it's just how quick can they adjust to new things, and how open-minded are they to learn new things. And that's always difficult, because there is a talent who has a certain technique, for example, or a certain idea of a play, and that brought him to the national stage. And then you want to teach him new things, but that maybe destabilize his strengths at the first stage. So that can not really create trust. It can also make them unsure about things, and that you have to consider. Or I always considered this. And that's how I look at this.
On a similar note from Frederick Notman, we've got here, how would you balance long-term changes within the setup with the impact of trying to get immediate results?
That's the biggest problem of every soccer coach in the world every weekend. They are always talking about long-term, but if they don't win three or four times in a row on Saturday, then they are in trouble. I think hockey is unique at that stage. So I was really fortunate to be involved in the German Hockey Federation, who never ever starts considering hire and fire mentality, calling his own. They've never done this. So, and by knowing this, that I think I'm the coach who lost most of his games at World Cup stage. So as an assistant, we became eighth, 2006. I became eighth or ninth, 2014. And I would say 16th, 2000, the last World Cup in England, because it wasn't possible to do it in a different way. So I have to swallow this, I have to do this. But long-term, I was convinced that certain things really work out well if you do it that way. And if you have an idea, if you have a bigger picture from the future perspective, then sometimes you have to adjust it and change it, but you have to protect your philosophy, but not by dictating, by convincing and inviting. That's a bigger difference. And I would say, sometimes, you know, you don't win it on Saturday, but you can extract really great things from certain moments of the game, which helps you to really improve either the player or the whole group.
Final couple of questions, because we won't take up all your afternoon. I hope I pronounced his name right. I've got Gamra Shibi, who talks about, to what extent are you developing the technical skills in the international environment compared to those that obviously go into the club environment? Is that club versus international program?
I think it's not club versus. It's super great to see that they have a natural way of using technical skills. So they definitely bring it into the national program, and there they have to learn to adapt and adjust it on a higher speed level and on a higher pressure level. So they really have to make these decisions under pressure. And on the other side, you could see that there are things possible technically and tactically on club level, which are super interesting because they have a bit more time or they have a different perspective on the game. And then I watch this and say, okay, how does it come? How do they start thinking about this? And then you can also extract it and use it on your level. And we've done this. And I think there's not either or. It's on both levels. It's really great to see what kind of technical skills you can develop and you can use. And with tactics, it's the same. It's definitely the same for me. It's not about the quantity or quality of players. It's just about the will of coaches and players to really do things and change things.
We've got time for one more question. And this one comes from Will Murray again. And I think it's one we can all relate to, is how do you implement principles of play alongside structures and shapes in your teams? And do they complement, support, or mutually exclusive to each other?
What does it mean at the end, exclusive to each other?
I suppose, do they integrate together, and how are you doing that?
With these, so I would say these two slides, it's about when you talk about at camps, for example. This is just an example about the performance pyramid when you're talking about this. But you can also talk about this from a feedback perspective with players. So divide them in groups, for example, and you want to know if the structure you've set up for camps and for traveling or for whatever, you have a leadership group or you ask the whole group and you really ask them about, is it the way it should be done or should we do it another way? And you really ask them and you invite them to give feedback on this. Then you have to be aware of that this feedback can also be hammer. It can be a hammer for you. So, and I always think that you have the principles of play, which I introduce with my staff to the players. And the principles are not really discussable. But when you talk about tactics, and then you can start discussing with players. So do you want to full press or do you want to play half court or do you want to shape or whatever? Then you can start talking with them. But principle is for me, it's in higher level. And the structure of things, so the whole environment, that can be always reshaped and discussed. But as I said here, it's about certain topics. It's related to, for example, the manager or the needs of the organization. Then you have to adapt to this, and you have to really consider this in your bigger picture.
Yami, have you got time for one more question?
For sure.
And I've lost the exact question, but it comes from Ben Barnes around, how do you take international quality and standards of the environment and put that into a club environment that many of us work in? Because we're fortunate enough to work in that international level. So how do you take that quality and put that into the club environment?
So I've worked in club environment for ages, and believe me or not, that we haven't had big budgets with a national team for years. So it's about if you have 1 euro, you have to invest it as wisely as possible. So it's not about having big budgets and then everything is possible. For me, it's about more to have an idea and then to figure out how to realize it. And that's on club level the same. If you talk about youth, for example, There are great youth coaches around in several clubs, and I love to watch sessions and look at them because they have great ideas, which doesn't even cost big money. Yeah, and they create sessions with a really great outcome because they use simple stuff, yeah, to really interact with players or really focus them on certain things. So I wouldn't say it's everything is possible on national team level and it's so hard on club level. It's more about focus on solutions and really have a positive approach of things. And then I look around and see things and I can use them for training. Or am I more the guy who says, oh, it's not possible. Oh, we don't have the money. Or I'm more in the complaining mode. But I think on club level, you can also do things really cool if people get really excited about developing things together.
And I think that's a good one to finish on, because we've all got a lot more time on our hands. And I suppose that's a bit of a challenge for the coaches that are working the club, is to create some cool stuff whilst you're having this free time and going to inspire.
I can imagine it's super difficult. But Jack, when we talked about before we started the meeting, yeah, just consider this situation we have right now with COVID-19 15 years ago, without webinars, without smartphones, without everything. Yeah. And now in our days, you can get so much information. If you want to have it, you don't need to use it, but you can get it. You can get access. And then you can think about, okay, how can we implement this in our, I would say, daily training environment? And that's really, that's unique, I would say. Yeah. That's a great thing.
Yami, thank you very much for your time. Incredibly humble and incredibly open and honest to share your thoughts and reflections. So thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to the European Hockey Federation podcast, presented by The Coaching Lab, powered by Coach Logic, and supported by the FIH Academy. More podcasts will follow for Series 1 over the next 6 weeks. Follow EuroHockey.org on all social media to keep in touch.